Do you really think that?
Do
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. we don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe, Ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi, Hotep family. Hope everything is well with you today. Hope you had a great weekend. It's Brother El Hajj Malik El Shabazz, Brother Omawali, Brother Malcolm X weekend. Hope you had a chance to engage in some festivities and some collective festivities. Hope you had a chance to do that. I know here in Atlanta, they've been having the Malcolm X grassroots movement, and along with many other organizations, having in the West End here, West End Park, right off of Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard. And the turnout was well. And in fact, every morning, yesterday and Saturday morning, it rained. It really rained. And but yet, after 12, it was a beautiful day. And I know I enjoyed it. It was a great, great time. I love the people. I love us. Love to be with us. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening. Once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And all times are going to give our Eastern times. Every Monday and Wednesday from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., Our Story with Baba Wes Johnson out of New Orleans. Thursdays from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Thursdays, the Black Liberation Movement with Brother Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club. Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard every Friday at 8 p.m. Sunday from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m., Pinckney to Pinckney, activist Reverend Edward Pinckney out of Benton Harbor, Michigan, Sundays from 5 to 6. And then at Sundays at 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. All right, family, let's read what we read every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. The Inyasa Sim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. May 18th. An artist, if he is truly an artist, is only interested in one thing, and that is to wake up the minds of men. Marvin Gaye. The album What's Going On is one of the most profound African musical creations ever, Ashe. Mercy, Mercy Me, Inner City Blues, Save the Children, and of course the title song are only a few of the cuts that awaken the deadened consciousness of so many Africans blindly spiraling headfirst into the abyss of colorlessness, identitylessness, blamefulness, and insanity. After listening to his brother upon his return from the European war against the Vietnamese, and against the better wishes of his producer, Brother Marvin composed a masterpiece of consciousness that not only the genius of a supreme musical warrior could have created to wake up the minds of our people. Sadly, so few of today's music talent has seen fit to wake up African minds. Even sadder are those defending the Europeans' appropriation of our music as if it belongs to them or is somehow evidence of being us. Their historical self-serving pattern is clear. Once they neutralize the political force that sets revolutionary thoughts into motion, they exploit the motion as if it were something they originally created or embraced. Nevertheless, today, there are still true warrior artists like Professor Griff. Saw Professor Griff yesterday. Always good to see that brother, Professor Griff. Dead Prez, Stickman, Talib Kweli, Paris, Nas, United Front, Precise Science, Shaka, and Moral, and the Moral, who have taken on the responsibility of giving us lyrics dedicated to our ancestors' future. They should be honored for having acted on the courage to wake us up. Ashe. Affirm, I study the genius of artistic messengers of consciousness. Affirm, I study the genius of our artistic messengers of consciousness. May 19th. If you knew him, you would know why we must honor him. Malcolm was our manhood, our living black manhood. This was his meaning to his people. The brother who gave the eulogy, Brother Ozzie Davis. We speak in honor of those African warrior scholars who have consciously proven their worth. We speak in honor of those at whose feet we humbly sit and study so that we can learn how to be warriors, warriors for our people. We speak in honor of those Jagnocks. So don't use mentor. Use Jagna. Jagnats is the plural. Jagnak is the plural. Use Jagna. Don't use mentor. We speak in honor of those Jagnak who know no way other than that of our ancestors, who have done and continue to do all and more in their power to confront, battle, and destroy any who would take the knowledge of the third eye from our children. We speak in honor of those who unhesitatingly fight and will forever do battle for us simply because we are their people. Our children are their children. Our spirit are one. We speak in honor of those who have unerringly paved the way on the battlefield, who made a way when we could not see for our ignorance and near comatose submission, who stood alone when we were afraid or arrogant to answer the war horn. This praise song is for those who, since consciousness, have not committed treason against our ancestors, who have consistently stayed on the revolutionary path of the deeply dedicated, uncompromising warrior scholar, who honor our ancestors through what they do and what they say. Affirm, I speak in honor of our warrior ancestors, Ashe. I speak in honor of our warrior ancestors, brothers and sisters, the Inya Sisim of daily revolutionary thought. Ashe. Brothers, this is a special day. This is the birth date of the Honorable Elhaj Malik El Shabazz, Brother Omar Wally, Brother Malcolm X. I have a brother here with me today who's been on this program many times. I appreciate him tremendously. So we're going to talk about Malcolm at 100. Today would have been his 100th birthday. He was born May 19th, 1925. And so we're going to talk about Malcolm. And, of course, I want you to join this conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Brother Muhammad Abdullah, are you with me?
Yes, I am, Boshi.
All right, you sound good. You sound clear, brother. How are you today, man, on this great day?
I'm humbled, Oshi, that you allowed me to be part of this forum and this communication, because we know with everything, you know, even if you go into the grocery store, if you don't have some communication and some understanding, you're going to end up someplace else.
That's right.
So I appreciate you inviting me back on this day that Malcolm was born on, this day, May 19th, 2020. I'm sorry, 1925. So today, had he not been assassinated at the youthful age of 39, he would be 100 years old.
I say.
Yesterday was actually my birthday, and I thought to myself, I said, you know, I've never really thought of that I was born a day, you know, calendar-wise. Malcolm was born on the 19th of May. I was born the 18th of May. I'm not into astrology or horoscopes and that, so I've never tried to draw any particular meaning from it, but it's very interesting to draw some parallels. And one of the things we know about Malcolm, that I know about Malcolm, is that he would not have celebrated his birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Muslims right. don't celebrate birthdays. I don't mean that some Muslims do, but traditionally Muslims don't celebrate birthdays. Malcolm never celebrated his birthday. And if you go around the Muslim world, you will see an activity. It's called Maulud al-Nabi. Maulud al-Nabi. You can find, if you go to Africa, parts of Nigeria or Ghana, you might see Muslims celebrating. If you go to Turkey, Pakistan, India, Egypt, you might see Muslims celebrating the Prophet Muhammad's birthday. Prophet Muhammad never celebrated his birthday. This is a made-up holiday. And I actually did a little research, and I asked, you know, I'm not friends with AI yet, but
don't get entrapped, brother. Don't get entrapped.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, Oshi, it's so present here. You know, they tell us about things like tell me about something before it comes, and they may have, but I wasn't paying attention. But it's here now. If you Google something now, you'll 90% of the answers are going to come back AI generated.
That's right. It's ubiquitous.
But instead, I asked, what is the origin of celebrating birthdays? And it traced it back to Kemet.
Is that right?
It said that
okay.
the leaders of Kemet used to have, you know, the other people did, but they celebrated whoever the, I don't know if the term pharaoh is
or king.
Appropriate.
Yeah. Leader, king. Ruler, pharaoh,
yeah.
king.
But that's where it yeah. was. That was, and then, of course, like the other things you mentioned earlier, that the Romans and the Europeans picked up from us, stole from us, borrowed from us, appropriated mm-hmm. from us. And likewise, you know, we've had some of the stuff they've created implanted on us. So that's the case. But clearly, Malcolm would not have celebrated his birthday, but I'm more wishful that this brother, wow, what would he have been? What would he say about our world that, when we spoke before, previous to coming on, I mentioned that one of my sons, Abdurrahman, had asked me this question that Malcolm asked. This was during the time he was a minister under Elijah Muhammad in the Nation of Islam. And he asked, how could so many black people come under the rule of so few white people? And those are the type of mathematical equations and rhetorical questions that Malcolm was just a master at asking, because he made you think.
Right.
That's what
That's
I
right.
credit my yes. association with Malcolm, my introduction to him when mm-hmm. I was 17. Going on 18 and mm-hmm. incarcerated and angry and all that other stuff. And I read his book, and it kind of calmed me down quite a bit, because Malcolm was a person who rarely showed he could laugh. Mm-hmm. He had a laugh that was endearing. You wanted to be close to somebody who just had laughed and smiled like he did. But he made you think about your image and what you, how you appear, what do you look like to people and presenting yourself, and that you represent something, and so you try to show up and be your best. And that was probably my first admiration from him, along with his eye-opening knowledge about Pauline Christianity, Western mm-hmm. Christianity, and the issue of race and racism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Man, I tell you, as I'm listening to it, I'm thinking about my awakenings, my understanding of Malik El-Shabazz or Malcolm X, Brother Omar Wally, around that time of last few years in high school when the book came out. In fact, I remember it very clearly when he was assassinated. I remember it very clearly. I'm riding in the car with my mother and my auntie out of Chicago, and it comes on the radio. And I had some understanding of Malcolm, you know, prior to his book coming out and being noted based on the Nation of Islam, because Muhammad Ali, I love Muhammad Ali, was joining the Nation of Islam, you know. And so I had an understanding, you know, from that. But not clear until after he was assassinated, after he was killed, and then picked up the autobiography of Malcolm X, which, of course, you can buy on Amazon for like about $200.
Yeah. Are you serious?
I'm serious, man. For about $200, if you want to buy the autobiography of Malcolm X on paperback. Well, but I would assume it's on paperback. I've never seen it in hardcover, but yeah, man.
$200,
man.
So, I just gave my copy to my grandson, Santana, before he left going to Virginia. I might have to steal it back.
I know, man. And put it up for auction. See if you can get it more than 200. I hear you. But yeah, you know,
one thing about Malcolm is you never can really, it's kind of like going back and looking, you know, and I've read his book more than once over the years, but always finding something, or just say another dimension of who he was. And I thought about, we discussed earlier, the fact that at the time that he came out of prison in 1952, he was 27 years old. And I thought, wow, when I was 27, I had gone through the Nation of Islam. Elijah Muhammad had died. His son, Waris D. Muhammad, had taken over. And I was like a horse let out of a barn. I was in Atlanta partying, acting wild, because it was like you had been bottled up. So that sort of was going on. So I had at that age, at the age Malcolm came out and joined the Nation of Islam, and as you had said earlier when we talked, he really brought the Nation of Islam, the attention of the Nation of Islam, nationally, like it had not been before.
Oh, no doubt. He brought it to the forefront, no doubt about it.
He increased the numbers. He mm-hmm. increased the number of temples that were open. And he came out. I mean, you're talking about a guy with an eighth grade education at best, but was nevertheless an intellectual giant, could, you know, engage in discourse with anybody on any level. And I think that's what he lent to whoever lent him their ear, is that, you know, and you've been there, I've been there. You feel like after you listen to Malcolm, you can talk to anybody,
mm-hmm.
no matter what their station, president of the United States,
for
governor,
sure.
Mayor.
You have that confidence. You have that assuredness, man. He was an intellectual to me. He was an intellectual giant because he was a voracious reader, as it said, that he would read by just a little sliver of light from a hallway into his cell. And he would follow that along with, you know, just avid, you know, very knowledgeable, debate on any subject and kick ass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, at Oxford University in England, you know, any college campus in America. Mm-hmm. But that was sort of part of the draw, with all its flaws and defects as an American black nationalist cult. I probably upset a lot of people, but you know, you have to call them like you see it. I was a member, so I can talk about my past. But the coming in, that was part of the spirit of the Nation of Islam that transcended some of the theological and science fiction aspects of the Yaqub's history, was the confidence that you could speak to anybody. You were trained to be able to speak to police in a way that didn't put yourself at risk, and more or less kept them off balance, because they would ask questions and you know how to answer their questions without answering their questions.
you know how to answer them without answering them. I hear you.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, how many members in the Nation of Islam? Those who know don't tell, and those who tell don't know. You know, you were trained to respond, right, you know, to questions rhetorically or otherwise in such a way that it sort of disarmed the questioner, took them out of where they were and trying to take you. And basically, in some cases, you know, when you were talking to a Caucasian police officer, he just was not used to encountering most African Americans who could handle them, you know, orally, like you were trained to do in the Nation of Islam, again, despite all of its flaws and defects. Malcolm was certainly a beacon, a part of that light. And then he took it to another level because, like, you know, when you enter a deep sleep and, you know, your mom comes in the room and opens up the blinds and reminds you, you should have really been up already. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't care what you were dreaming about, it, you can't go back to sleep. So once his eyes were open, then he began to speak with his own voice. Then he just became that much more attractive to a much wider audience, because during most of the time Malcolm was alive, most African Americans were terrified at associating or aligning themselves with him, Elijah Muhammad, or the Nation of Islam. And so when he came out, it sort of opened them up to the masses. It just like dreams and most spectacular things that, you know, it just went away too fast.
Yeah, yeah. Because you didn't get a chance when he really was open to the wider world and all the possibilities. But one thing I definitely want to help the audience to understand, at least from my understanding, there's been this perception, because once he got out of the Nation, he became a civil rights leader. No, he was never a civil rights leader. He was a human rights leader with a broad scope. And he was a Pan-Africanist. He understood how important it was for us to link up with Africa, you know, because that is our home. That's the ancestors. And he understood that clearly. You know, some would like to think that once that happened, he became a man for all seasons, a man for all people. No, you know, even when he was being challenged by this government, you know, he still knew who the enemy was, even when he went on Hajj, you know, and was supported by a lot of the Middle Eastern people, so to speak, you know, to assist him on Hajj. He still understood how important it was to be African. And that's a message that I like to get out there, because some people want to believe that that changed, that he was no longer a Pan-Africanist, but now he was a person who embraced all cultures, embraced all people. No, he knew who the enemy was, always, and he articulated that.
One of the things that Malcolm did for himself and for us as well is, He took the narrative to a place where it became much more difficult for people to paint him into a particular corner, mm-hmm. because that's what people tend to do.
Right.
Some with bad intentions, some with good intentions. He, Malcolm is, there's a, I can't remember this, there was a cartoon drawing that used to appear in newspapers nationally. I want to say this character's name was Tweety. And there was an image of him one day painting the floor of a room, and he had painted himself into a corner. Mm. He had painted the whole floor, but he's on one side and the door is on the other side. Mm-hmm. So now he's mm-hmm. got to mess up the floor.
Right.
He's got to stay where he is until the floor dries. Malcolm broke free of that because once you become a person who is, you know, truth is universal. Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of where I saw him. Clearly, Malcolm reformed and resurrected the bad image that we were given by America and the American media, Hollywood, is that Africa was something ugly and only involved people running around with very little clothes on and throwing spears. And that was the image that they presented to us. Up until I came in contact with Malcolm, that's what you saw on television and in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
If you saw Africa depicted, they were either being made look like fools by the Three Stooges and the Marx Brothers, or on a more serious level, if it had anything to do with the Ashkenazi or the 18th and 19th, 20th century Jewish people, you know, they were made to look like everybody who wasn't European or Jewish was some kind of lower civilization.
Mm-hmm.
And it went across the spectrum. It wasn't just Africa. It was Africa, Asia, any place
sure.
that was not European was made to look like it was nothing. So the vast majority of our people did not want to be associated with Africa. It just didn't have anything appealing or attractive to it. And that, with as much as we know today, it's still like that.
Yes, it is. To
amongst
some degree,
a lot of
to
our
some
people.
Right, among our, to some degree, because of the you image. Because of the
our
image.
Yeah. I said it. You know, to look on television, to go through the community, and see the vast majority of our people with these fans as eyelashes, hair of all different
colors,
types,
yeah.
You know, dressed. Young women are dressed in such a way that they aren't showing flesh, total flesh-wise. You can see straight through to,
yeah.
you know, their private parts. And so we have been are still very much conditioned by the values and the images that America they had last week during a major rain weather. Storm, you know, serious rain and hail. They was having a Beyonce. Now, what is the image that Beyonce is presenting to her fans now? And I'm aware that we have some cowboy roots, but the image that she's portraying is not that. She is not portraying yesterday on 60 Minutes of one of the programs, they have an organization of young African-American women who are involved in horseback riding, rodeo, and that kind of stuff. So that's been part of our culture for years. It's not everywhere. It's not for everybody. But the image that this young lady is presenting is just something that if you have daughters, that is not what you want as a role model. But that's what our young people have seen, and that's what many of them are gravitating towards. Malcolm was the opposite of that.
Mm-hmm.
Was the opposite of that, and if he was here 100 years old, he would be as befuddled and bewildered as mm-hmm. I am. And I don't want to speak for you, but when you look at our young people, and I'm not going to give any detail, but, you know, when I was in Atlanta visiting about 4 weeks ago, we had, you know, in celebration, we had a chance to see something like, I'll never forget your daughter Nikki came up out of the basement from where they were originally were. She said, "Thank God I don't have a daughter." Because the young ladies, the young ladies now to go to the prom or the homecoming,
yeah,
they have to be naked.
Yeah.
They have to be naked.
Yeah,
they have to have something on their head that does not grow out of their scalp. And they have to have some eyelashes on that could bring back a fainting person.
Yeah.
And some of these girls, their eyelashes are so big, if somebody fainted, they could just go in front of them and blink and bring them, revive them back. Being extreme, but some of it is extreme.
Yes,
and it is not the image that Malcolm would have been standing for if he was here today at 100 years old.
In fact, I look at it like this in terms of what if Malcolm, of course, he wasn't going to live. That's for sure. Not in this, not in European, Caucasians, European, Caucasian society, which is very extreme and very racist, you know. So he wasn't going to live. And had he lived, this wasn't going to be the place. I think that we would have been able to, even Dr. King, because Dr. King, back before he died, what did he say to Harold Belafonte? Exactly. I believe I'm trying to integrate my people into a burning building.
Yeah.
You know? And so they kind of knew that this is not for us. This is, we cannot be who we must be and should be and could be being up in this. And we can't. You know?
Yeah. It's brought even what you could point to as the modicum of success in America amongst our people, which is primarily education or business acumen, skills, you know, serious drive, discipline. You still, you're in a game that is just not to your advantage
at all.
In the long run, your integration into, you know, this society is fraught with things that we just never would have imagined. If you just take the image of, whoa, what would Malcolm say about the transgender and the LGBTQ equation? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I am not about oppressing anybody. I feel sad when I see Magic Johnson's son and Dwayne Wade's son, it's Michael Jackson, you know, some of what he sort of contributed to in his older years when he, you know, stopped singing to us and wanted to sing to the world. He just began to change or transform himself. What would Malcolm say about Michael Jackson? So it's a lot to be said about the state of affairs of our people in America in this day and time, because it's all of it is fraught with danger. It's very, very risque to try to achieve success in this modern American society.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, Malcolm and would be horrified if he was around today and had to look out and say, wow.
Yeah. And, but, did all but, that. See, and I, but I believe that, you know, if you transpose him from that time beyond to this time, yes. But I believe that at the time that had he been able to live, had he been able to develop beyond the cadre of leadership that he could have developed on the continent, he knew how important the continent was. He had traveled there many times. He knew how important that was. So he went beyond, although he tried to establish the Muslims Mosque Incorporated along with the Organization of African Unity, or the OAAU, you know, that what he wanted to do, because if you didn't want to deal with the theology of Islam, we had the Organization for African Unity. There was something to unite us as a people is what I'm coming to. And therefore, he wouldn't have succumbed to this madness. He would have called out the gatekeepers, who are the politicians, you know, who are some of the teachers, some of the people who try to maintain and sustain the privilege that whites that Europeans, Caucasians, have created for themselves to our detriment, to our exclusion. See, that I believe that he would have called that out so tough. And him and he would have developed a cadre of leadership. Imagine if it was Dr. King's people. Imagine if it was other groups who were very big at the time saying, yes, we're going to go now in this direction. Africa is waking up. Africa at the time, many of the countries were gaining independence from colonizers, although not really, because you had neocolonialism, because you had leadership that was trained in the U.S., trained in Europe, and many of those kept, I mean, really, this is deep, Muhammad. Look at Saudi Arabia, look at Qatar, Oman, look at these places. These people are so damn wealthy, they had to import the help. They had to import the help from the Philippines. They even brought in neutered brothers who went up into Libya and who were castrated and sent over to Saudi Arabia, sent over to Qatar, Oman, and to work in Abu Dhabi. And, you know, that would not have happened, I believe, had Malcolm had lived. I think that we would have been a stronger people because we didn't lack the kind of leadership. Our leadership was, since that time, has been, you know, sold out. I'm talking about Jesse. I'm talking about Al. All of them begging crackers to be part of this madness. He wouldn't have done that. That's what I believe. I don't know how you feel.
Well, of course, anything that we say would be conjecture.
Exactly.
Similarly, we have to recognize also that Malcolm, I have a picture in my phone of Malcolm right before he went to Hodge.
Mm-hmm.
And in the picture, he is holding up one finger, and he's getting a shot. The vaccine, whatever vaccines he took prior to going to Hodge.
Yeah, yellow fever or malaria.
Mm-hmm. A little bit of everything. I mean, I've got a copy of all the vaccines I took when I went to Hodge in 2000. It's probably a little more extensive mm-hmm. now than it was back then.
Sure.
But he's holding his finger up, and he's taking the Shahada time. Now, this is after, in terms of his Islamic identity and knowledge, kind of, in a lot of respects, wasted 10, 12 years following Islam. So mm-hmm. at the time that Malcolm was killed, he was a baby both in Islam and as a Pan-African.
Right. This is true.
He was 39 years old. He mm-hmm. had not had, you're talking about, from, I think he was excommunicated around 1963. 2 years later, he was dead. So he did. He piled a lot into that 2 years.
Yes, he sure did.
But one of the other things he would have been, similar to what you say in a parallel, Malcolm would have been more of an Islamic scholar than he would have than the Malcolm that we had. So, for example, you know, we spoke earlier about, we have a problem with names. So Malcolm X, 60 years later after the man has been was killed, the people are still calling him Malcolm X.
Yeah.
Everybody in the nation had an X.
Yeah.
But this is what we do when we, you know, we create an icon, and then once you put that icon up there, it's hard to bring it down.
Yeah.
The other one, El Hajj Malik El Shabazz.
Right.
I don't think Malcolm ever wrote his name as that.
Because El Hajj just means that he went on Hajj, right? El Hajj just means he went on Hajj. Actually, it's Malik Shabazz.
That is a primarily African thing, Oshi.
Okay.
If you go around the Muslim world, the only place, and the reason for it is because, okay, some people are challenged by the fact that the Islam was born in Arabia. I was 1,400 years ago. I wasn't even a blimp, a thought. So I don't know. I mean, that's how as far back it goes. But the point being that nobody that I know who has been to Hajj calls himself El Hajj. The only people that I, and it's not everybody from Africa, but that's mostly an African thing, like the term Maulana, as in Maulana.
Karinga.
Ron Karinga.
Yeah, Maulana Karinga.
That's an Asian, Indo-Pakistani thing. And so Malcolm, you know, would not have affixed that name, or even the name Shabazz. It's hard for me to believe that the intellectual giant that Malcolm was, once he came into the knowledge that the term Shabazz has no place in Islam, that's a Indo-Pakistani, you know, derived identification. It's hard for me to believe. There's no disrespect to Sister Betty and his children. But, you know, I have the same problem. If I would have known when I changed my name from Lester Jones Leatherwood in 1976 to Muhammad Abdullah, I would have adopted my first name, my father's name, Smith. That's one of the reasons you never hear me call Malcolm L. Hodge, Malcolm X. I call him Malcolm Ibn Earl and Louise Norton Little. Son.
Okay.
That's Malcolm Smith. Because at some point he would have come into the knowledge of the fact that, according to Islam, you cannot change your family lineage unless it has some denigrating quality to it. Mm. So it's the whole name change thing that the Nation of Islam engaged in, wholesale name change, that is not even necessary or part of Islam. Mm-hmm. You hold on to your family lineage. It would be good and healthy if all of us could trace our lineage back to where in Africa we originally came or derived from. But most of us are not going to get to that place. But I think it would be good. And I think that's sure. What Malcolm would have grown into if he stayed here. Because there are some things, and I'll throw this one out there. By any means necessary, Muslims cannot say that. Not a intelligent, sincere Muslim, because what you are inviting is extremism.
Yes.
And at that point, Malcolm was being pushed to an extreme. When he's standing in that window with that rifle looking out, who is he looking for?
He's looking for Muslims. The Nation of Islam cats who've been trying to kill him. Yeah.
He's trying to kill him.
Right.
So you're talking about somebody, and then this resonates with me very much, this brother, you know, who died way too young. Remember the interview where Mike Wallace asked him, like, are you probably putting yourself under some kind of threat?
I'm already a dead man.
Yeah, I'm already a dead man. Mm-hmm. And he wipes the sweat off his face and his brow as he's saying that.
Mm-hmm.
That is serious trauma. I would not want to visit on anybody the trauma that Malcolm's wife and children suffered watching him being killed. The irony is, Malcolm's wife, Betty, was pregnant with twins when he was killed. When those Ku Klux Klansmen rode down on Malcolm's house when his father was away and his mother, Malcolm's mother was pregnant with Malcolm when that happened.
Mm.
Tell me that's not an irony.
Mm.
She was pregnant with Malcolm when that incident happened.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So this is really, you know, you think of a brother who, you know, with all that we've gone through to suffer the kind of death that he did, it's just unspeakable about speaking the truth about somebody. And I never hear people talk about, we like to talk about Arab slavery and being turned into units. I've read some of that. I don't know exactly where to follow those lines to, but I know for a fact here in America, we have, for the most part, been tutored here in America with the lack of knowledge and misinformation that we receive. And I think Malcolm would have continued to be a beacon of that light had he been allowed to live, but evidently it was not written as such. And the tragedy didn't end with him. Look how tragically Betty Shabazz passed.
Mm-hmm.
His son, grandson, Malcolm II.
Right, and look how he passed.
Mm-hmm. Say it again?
And look how he passed.
The grandson?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. According to what I read and heard, some blazing, guns blazing incident in Mexico.
Mexico City, yeah.
Mexico. Yeah, mm-hmm. And then, you know, his daughter, the one tried to have Farrakhan assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
As Kabila said, you know, not just all of them, man, have been spun out as a result of, you know, the tragedy that was visited upon Malcolm and his family so unnecessarily and tragically.
Yeah.
And so it's acknowledging his birth and what age would have been, you can't help but could look over the part that should not have been.
Yeah.
That brother should have been allowed to live and thrive, but he has somebody we can still learn from him. So I think that's the beauty of Malcolm's history and legacy,
mm-hmm.
that there are young people that are reading. I think his book is banned in a lot of places now, thanks to the current in 45 and 47 administration.
Mm-hmm.
This man wants to, he has the biggest eraser of any president I've ever seen in terms of trying to erase. The man tried to erase Jackie Robinson.
It's not funny. It's not funny, but it is, because that's how ridiculous it is that he has said, I don't like anything that looks at us adversely. I want only thing that glorifies us, our manifest destiny, you know. And so, you know, his assistant, Vice President J.D. Vance, is going into the American African Museum and taking stuff out of it. I mean, it's crazy, man. But then again, I'm saying, and I've been saying all along, this is who and what they are. And a lot of us don't want to see that. And Malcolm was telling us this. This is who taught you? Who taught you to hate your hair? Look at us today. Who taught you to hate the shape of your nose, your lips? Look at us today. So we're gonna talk about that. I'm going to take a break. And we're going to come back and open up the phone lines. We've got a lot of people, Brother Muhammad. We've got a lot of people who want to get in. So we're going to take
a sit back and listen.
Huh? Say what?
I'm going to sit back and let the callers speak.
Right on. That's it. Let's do that. Okay, because we got a lot of participants, and I appreciate it. And so just hang on, dear brothers. We're going to pay it. I'm going to play that Donald Byrd tribute to Malcolm X. I'm going to play that. So. Let's go, family. Here we go. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're going to be right back. I'm going to play Donald Byrd, Malcolm X tribute, and then we're going to open up the phone lines so you have an opportunity to get in and give us your African perspective on the issues that are affecting our people on a daily basis. And also, too, to say, what do you think would have happened had Malcolm been able to live and to be able to be the man that he was and would continue to be? All right, family, we'll be right back. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Washington, D.C. this morning. On Tuesday, Ways and Means Committee spent over 18 hours
turn that down, please.
Wednesday, over catastrophic impact that this legislation will have. We watch Republicans give away the farm, greedy billionaires. So,
yeah. Again.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Theme for Malcolm, Donald Byrd, the Blackbirds. Got a couple of pieces that were sent to me on my phone that I think I definitely want to bring some attention to it. Also, too, there are many of you are in the queue. Once I read this particular piece, Phone lines will be open. Just hit star twice. Hit star twice, and that'll get you an in. And I'll take them by the time I take each one as I see them, and you'll be able to get in to give us your perspective. But good sister, Sister Esmira, is listening. She says she was delighted. I thought you'd call in, but she wants to definitely wish Malcolm a happy 100, and he would be. Sadly, if he reappeared back in the flesh with us today, he would not be happy and hardly at all. But long live Malcolm Ashe, my lady, and she sent this particular piece. Educated one, and you educate a nation. The African man needs to start today to shelter, protect, and respect his woman. Ashe. She also writes, Malcolm X credited African women with influencing his increasingly progressive views on women and gender. Through his personal and political relationships with them, he gained awareness of their intellectual acumen. Because, you know, in Islam, and I don't know, I'm quite sure Brother Muhammad may say something to that, women have been, in some cases, although Islam doesn't say it, that should be, but in some cases, and you can see that today, like with the Taliban and so forth, they suppress women. Through his personal and political relationships with them, he gained an awareness of their intellectual acumen, the importance of a woman's equality, and the centrality of women's rights to African nationalism projects. Statements on women and gender equality punctuate his speeches. In his speech, The Role of Women, for example, he noted that through his travels and conversations with women, he became thoroughly convinced of the importance of giving freedom to women and aware of the contributions our women have made. When the contributions that women have made, where am I at? Move that thing. In the struggle for freedom, the leadership noted that he was in favor of giving them all the leeway possible because they made a greater contribution than many of us men have ever made. That's right. Women have. That's right. Yep. Ashe, his Midwestern roots. That's right. Omaha, Nebraska. Yep. So hit star twice. Oh, okay, brother. Good afternoon. Brother Hayes out of L.A. Good afternoon.
Oh.
Yes, go ahead.
Talking to me?
Yes, I am.
Oh, that name is wrong. This is C5 the Money.
Oh, man. Oh, brother, how you been, man?
My brother just called and told me to listen in on your show, so I was just listening.
Right on, man. Tony called you and told you to listen. I appreciate that. Okay.
Okay.
I got Brother Muhammad Abdullah. I don't know if you remember Brother Muhammad in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. Brother Lester, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I just I just got on and I was in, you know, listening to the conversation, which was enlightening, because, you know, a lot of us, it's my brother and myself, were what I say, sons of Malcolm.
Yeah.
And the fact that our political enlightenment started
yes.
with reading
no the doubt.
Autobiography of Malcolm.
Mm-hmm.
So, and listening to his speeches, and, you know, we came to him late, you know.
Right.
In other words, 67 when I read the autobiography.
Exactly.
And he had already been assassinated, murdered by then.
Yeah, I read it starting 68, 69 when I read it. See?
Right.
So right on. All right, Brother Damani, it's good to hear your voice, man. And I'm here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 8 to 10.
Now that I got your number, I know I can tune in. So,
8 to 10 your time, man.
Yeah, so when I call, I like to listen, you know, and I was enjoying the mm-hmm. the conversation that was you were talking about.
Okay.
So, but I will try to catch up with you more often now that I got you.
Right on. I appreciate it. All right. Brother Muhammad, you had something to say?
Yes, that's Dia Damani?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so where I remember Dia, first meeting Dia is on Green Bay Avenue at the Topographical Research Center.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So, yeah, him and Tony and Canfield.
Yeah.
That's where I have 1 foot out there in the, as we used to say, 1 foot in the graveyard and 1 foot in consciousness. Hopefully our venture brought 2 feet together. But yeah, I remember that awareness at the top of ground. And then we ended up going to the top center in Chicago and then Detroit.
That's right. Well, I didn't go to Detroit. I went to this one in Chicago, and as well as one that was on Green Bay Avenue, and hearing Brother Damani and Brother Tony Courtney talk about these interstates, the interstates,
and the mass commercialization of what was being produced in the United States, and how the efforts that they went about when people wasn't buying fast enough, they established motivation research institutes to learn the human behavior.
Them.
And how to, you know,
sublimation
and all of that in commercials. So yeah, that was the top center was my path to coming in contact with that knowledge.
Right,
I give credit where credit is due.
All right, right on, brother Dia. Thank you, man, for the call, man. Just hang on. If you got something to say, once again, hit star twice. Get you back in, okay, dear brother.
All right, my brother.
Peace. All right, what we got here now? Phone lines are open, brothers and sisters. Hit star twice and let you in. All right. I got Brother Paul. I think that's Brother Paul joining us out of the UK. Brother Paul, is that you?
Ah, Bubba Ochi, how are you today?
I'm doing well, my friend. How are you, man? You're on the phone with Brother...
And
I'm from with Brother Muhammad Abdullah. We're talking about today, a great day, the 100th birth date of Malik El-Shabazz, Malcolm X.
Great day, absolutely. Good morning to your guest.
Good morning.
Well, Baba Ochi, you know, I come to the knowledge of our great ancestor, Amawali El-Shabazz. Malcolm X. I came to that knowledge when I used to work in my dad's business, and he used to have me at the till there collecting money, but sometimes I used to get quite bored, you know what I mean? So I go out walking, and there was a bookshop nearby, and I kept seeing this they had like a lot of different, it was a Malcolm X theme they had in this bookshop. I wasn't familiar with this person, but I wondered who he was, because that time I can't honestly say I had knowledge of our story or our heroes. I didn't have that kind of knowledge, and I just wondered who this person was. And I went in the bookshop and made some inquiries, and they suggested some book. I think I ended up buying a summarization of the autobiography of Malcolm X. And I remember, like, I couldn't put it down, and I'd get in trouble with my dad because I'm not paying attention and I'm not doing what I'm supposed to.
That's right. You're letting money go out the door, dude.
So he said to me, what is that you're reading, you know? And he took the book and he looked at it. And I remember him saying to me, you know, my dad's a Christian. So he said to me, oh, that's in the past. Things have changed very much. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I remember thinking, wow, my dad obviously knows who this person is. And, you know, that's a big statement. But the thing is, when I was reading the book, I didn't get the feeling that things has changed that much. Because I could recognize some of the characters he was talking about. I could identify the characters. You know, maybe not to the extent where you're in the street and you're pimping and prostitute. I didn't know no prostitutes or whatever. But you could recognize people who were on their way. If do you get where I'm coming from?
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
Type of behaviors, type of street behaviors. You know, you could see that certain behavior, you know, where it would go. Mm-hmm. And it really made me turn a corner in my life. It really did.
Yeah.
It had a profound effect on me. And then later on, I went and bought the autobiography of Malcolm X, and I've read it many times, you know, over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the thing what struck me the most, which appealed to my consciousness the most, I've always been a person to speak out, and it used to get me into trouble in school, but I didn't care because it was in my blood. It's in my soul. If something's wrong, I'm going to say it. I ain't frightened of nobody and nothing. Mm-hmm. Nothing on this planet or no man. I'm not frightened of death at all. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the bottom line is that appealed to me. His conviction, his loyalty, the fact that the person who lifted him up, he saw fault in that and he spoke out like a champion without fear. You know, I said on this platform before, he sacrificed his life. And the, one of the callers, I can't remember it was, said that he got killed, right? And my heart kind of sank. And then I had to question myself and think, why did I feel like that when he made that reply? And I thought about it. And the conclusion I came to is that, his physical body may have got killed physically, murdered, assassinated by the traitors who took his life.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality of it is, we're still talking about him now, so he ain't dead.
No, that's right. That's right, brother.
You overstand what I'm saying to
you. Oh, you're almost definitely.
You overstand where I'm coming from.
Oh, no doubt. Definitely. I say all the time, they're doing libation. Say the names. Because by saying their names, you keep their memory and their spirit alive. And he's more alive than us today.
You keep that. Yeah. The energy. You see, this is what I'm saying. When you hear people say, oh, he's dead, you know they don't know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look. And let me show you. Let me demonstrate. They don't know what they're talking about. You know, if you ask them, what was your grandfather's name 2 generations ago, even 1 generation ago, most people can't even tell you that. But you know this man's name. You know his name. Mm-hmm. You know his life story. That's the energy he emanated on this planet while he was here. Mm-hmm. And that sacrifice he made, and it was a sacrifice, because he wasn't that stupid that he knew that he wasn't going to get taken out. He wasn't that dumb. He came from the street. He know how the street works. And he saw the same street behavior in the movement he was at. He saw it.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them came off the street. So he saw that. He knew what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, it's his conviction. His conviction to the truth and righteousness. You see, let me show you the last thing I'm going to say. A lot of people talk about leaders like these politicians are their leaders. These politicians ain't nobody's leader. Unless you make them your leader, unless you call them by their name and you follow them. Because a leader is someone you follow. And I don't follow none of these people. None of these people who talk all sort of claptrap and lies and all these crap. But I will follow Amawali, El Shabazz, Malcolm X. Because as I've just reiterated to you, my brother, my elder, that conviction, that righteousness, say what you do and do what you mean. Instead of saying something and doing something different in the dark.
Right.
He studied for conviction, and that energy, he hasn't done it because that energy still resonates with me now. Every time I hear his name, I lock in.
Mm-hmm.
Energy. Listen, let me tell them. Let me advocate them, because a lot of them have been educated, but they're not advocated. Let me advocate their minds, yeah, and take them out of that mumbo jumbo stuff they're in. When you're advocated, you know, you don't understand, you don't believe, you know. That energy can't be killed. It can't die. Energy can't die. It can only amplify. And by us reiterating the message, it grows and it gets stronger. My children in school in England, London, they have Malcolm X on the curriculum. It's on the curriculum in England. Malcolm X is on the curriculum.
Is that right?
None of these other people. That's the power of his conviction. When he came to London, he was on his way to France, and they banned him from coming into France, right? And he came to London. an Asian, an Indian organization in the Midlands were having some trouble with some fascist MPs. They were getting run out of town. They called for Malcolm Ali, El Shabazz, Malcolm X to come to their aid. Did you know that?
Didn't know it.
Yeah, when he came, he went up north. It wasn't an African organization. The Asians called for him to come and save them. Now, that taught me something. You see what a real leader is? Mm-hmm. Let me show you what a real leader is. He's gifted by divinity, not by man, by divinity. He's born that way. So he can appeal to anybody because they recognize that leadership in him. They really recognize that power. And that's the problem with a lot of us. And that's why they had to take him down. Because a lot of us, when we behave like some jealous little bad-minded, red-eye little whatever. That's how we behave. A lot of us, we don't like to see it. We like to take it down.
Yeah.
Okay? That's the reality. And that was the reality then.
Yeah.
Well, listen,
Paul,
Brother
Paul, I got a whole bunch of other callers. Believe me, I got a ton of callers. So I'm going to try to get
you right on, Baba Ochi. Keep up the good work and keep the fire burning.
I say, thank you, Brother Paul. Appreciate you. All right. In fact, what Brother Paul said at the end was what Brother Muhammad was saying, you know, that he had that fire. 334. Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Baba Oshi. Good day to you. And to you, Brother Abdullah, it's a pleasure to hear you again. First of all praises and honor to our ancestor, Malcolm Little, Malcolm X, on this centennial year of his birth. The question that I have for Brother Abdullah is this. If we could think of three circles, each one representing Malcolm X, the other representing Thomas Sankara, and the other representing Ibrahim Touré, how would you think that one would be able to have influenced the other? In other words, would all three of these circles coincide, or one would fit into the other and fit into the other? How would you see, because these were men, particularly between Sankara and Malcolm X, they were in two different countries, two different time frames. And, of course, you know, with Ibrahim Touré being born in 88. So it's just, how would you think that they would have influenced each other in this process? Or Malcolm influencing Sankara, influencing Ibrahim?
Yes. That's, I think, well, Brother Muhammad, go ahead.
So I think the one endearing quality that Malcolm had that would transcend and be applicable or workable for anyone is his character.
Shay,
yes. It's difficult to find individuals today who either are put forth or put themselves forth as leaders, and then you just wait a little while, and then the lack of character begins to show. And Malcolm was an individual that was not for sale.
That's right. No sellout.
By him. He was an individual that was not weak when it came to his sex drive. And I want to take this opportunity and end by saying anybody, Manny Marable or anybody, who suggests that Malcolm ever engaged in this, and I'm going to include Terrence Howard because he said something recently about Marvin Gaye along the same line, that he was going to play Marvin Gaye in a movie until Quincy Jones told him that Marvin engaged in some type of homosexuality. Say that when the person is here. Say that when the person is alive to defend themselves. I don't have any problem defending Malcolm's character against anybody. Thanks to Alex Haley and Malcolm from his autobiography, we have the knowledge that Alex Haley, around Christmas time, Muslims don't celebrate Christmas, although some Muslims do. But traditionally, Muslims don't celebrate Christmas, Jesus' birth, death, or any of that. And he asked Malcolm if he could buy. He said, I know you don't celebrate Christmas, but do you mind if I give your daughters some African-American dolls as a gift? And he said, yes. And he said he realized for the first time that he had been so busy working on behalf of Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam that he had never bought his daughters a gift. 12 years. He was in the position of a minister in the Nation of Islam, and he never bought his daughters a gift. So that's the kind of person he was. His dedication ran. It's very difficult to find. I don't have that level of character. I try to be a good person to the best of my ability, but Malcolm, I don't know anybody that ever could say anything that Malcolm ever did as a sellout, a compromiser, or to bite his tongue for anybody. And his character just stood out above all else. And it goes hand in hand with what Prophet Muhammad said. Of all the things he was brought to establish, he said, the one thing I was sent is for you to perfect your character, to establish in you good character traits. Mm-hmm. Whatever you think about Islam, you judge Islam by what you see most Muslims do. If you go to some place and you see people, Muslims jumping up and down and going into trance and that, you're not going to see that everywhere. And so that's not part of Islam, but clearly having good character, and it's not easy. It's not easy to have good character. You have to have the ability to say no,
right?
Especially when you're talking about our young people who are in deep trouble. I would love for Malcolm to be here, but as the brother said, Brother Paul said, he's here. He's not going anywhere. But mm-hmm. if the young people knew of Malcolm's character and tried, we would be a better society, a better community.
No doubt.
Because so many of our young people are.
He was truly the model of manhood that we need to emulate. There's no doubt about his integrity, his character, his speech, his willingness to make sacrifice his family for us, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, so I agree with you. Brother Lusk, is that are you done, brother?
Yeah, that was basically it with regards to the influence of Malcolm X, say, on Thomas Sankara or Ibrahim Touré, even though these were all three different individuals out of different time frames, mm-hmm. how would they, well, what would Brother Abdullah say with mm-hmm. regards to influencing Sankara and Touare as well? I mean, with, you know, even the name of Burkina Faso, the land of the upright man.
Right.
So that is a character, right?
Exactly.
Character trait. Exactly. But thank you so very
much. All right, brother. All right.
Thank
you, Brother
Nelson Ted. Mandela.
Yes.
What set Nelson Mandela apart from all of the figures who stood up under apartheid was his character.
Mm-hmm.
It shone through beyond. He believed in the right of self-defense and defending yourself against oppression, but he never let it affect his character. His character held out till the end.
I say. All right. Brother Ralph, good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Brother Oshie, and I want to say thank you to you and your guests, man. Brother Malcolm, you know what I mean? Yeah. You know, my wife gave me a heck of a compliment yesterday while we were listening to a lot of his speeches. Mm-hmm. She said to me, I said, you know, that's my role model. I love that brother.
I say.
And she said to me, I can tell because you try your best to carry yourself like him.
Right on.
And when she said that, man, it almost brought tears in my eyes because she lives with me. She knows me. And
yes.
I could fool myself into believing anything. But, you know, my brother, and I'm listening to the brother. Man, let me tell you something. I wish my brother was around today and our folks had an ear to listen because, first of all, he said when he walked into that conference or that lecture, He said, let's leave our religions at the door.
That's right.
Because if they was doing us any good, we wouldn't be here anyway.
That's right.
You know, and you know, and then he said so much deep stuff that our people, I hear him talking about our children need to model themselves. But no, our adults need to listen to the ballot or the bullet.
Mm-hmm.
Because he said, if you pledge your allegiance to them, now we know what the Republicans are. They're a bunch of racists. But we cannot see that that other party is just as vicious
yes.
and racist as the
yes.
Republicans. It's just that they have a few more black faces to fool you.
Mm-hmm.
And people go for that each and every time. He said, if you are loyal to a party that does that to your people, they ain't give us no reparation. Matter of fact, they were the party of slavery. If you're loyal to a party that like that, he said, you are a traitor to your race.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these are the words of Malcolm, but we don't want to say that. We don't want to remember that part. He said, you are a traitor to your race.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I try to come across to our people and let them know how wicked that party is that they pledge their allegiance to and go vote 80%, they first thing come out of them, well, you must be a Trump supporter. No, I'm an independent. I don't believe in either one of these parties.
Mm-hmm.
I believe, like you, Brother Oshie, independence.
That's right.
If I could vote for that
yes.
brother in Burkina Faso, I would vote for
That's
him.
Right. That's right.
You know, so we got to stop playing around with this thing. We said we're conscious. We said we want liberty. But we are in love with the Democratic Party, man. And that is one of our things that I see that real, I said, I wish my brother was around today because he would let them know. These people, man, they just got a few puppets out there. Letitia James up there, she didn't even do nothing to the, she didn't even raise a finger to those correction officers, and I'm going to use that term lightly. She didn't raise a finger or a voice talking about it was a conflict of interest. She couldn't bring charges against them for murdering a brother in prison. So, you know, these people are ridiculous, man. And the thing about it, I'm getting in the habit now, Brother Oshie, of not really beating up our people because, I deserve to get beat up sometimes because I fall short. I'm not perfect.
No, we're not.
You know?
I'm sorry. I hear you.
Yeah, I'm not perfect. So, yeah, but, you know, some things we have to, like, leave at the door, all our beliefs. Because if we're going to come together and try to do this thing, we got to leave all that belief stuff because all that's going to do is divide us and make us weak. So the brother was very powerful. I look at that man as a prophet. I love him. I play his speeches all the time. I love, and what my wife said to me yesterday, man, it almost brought tears in my eyes that this woman that I live with would say something like that. And I'm going to share this too, Brother Oshie. I didn't even know who he was until late in my 20s.
Mm.
And then I went to, you know, Farrakhan was here because MOVE just got bombed. I was a young man.
Okay, in the 80s, yeah.
Yep, mm-hmm. And MOVE just got bombed, and he went down to Atlantic City. He let people, I said, Dad, man, this brother's deep. So I started going to the mosque because I said, but then, you know, they talk about Marvin Sapp and how he said, lock the doors, we not get this money. That happened to me at that mosque.
Oh,
they said
deep.
The minister want us to pledge this, and they locked the door, and they put the fruit in front of the doors. And I said, if I make it out of here.
I ain't never coming back.
I ain't never coming back. And let me tell you something. They are guilty because I remember the brothers in the 80s used to say, if we could dig up Malcolm Little and shoot him again, we would.
Yeah.
So they were guilty.
Okay. Yes.
I remember they said that. So, you know, I just had to, like, let you know my affiliation with the Nation. It was brief.
Right on.
But it was all I need to know. You know what I mean? It's just another cult, in my opinion.
Okay.
In my opinion. It was freedom for some, but in my opinion, just another cult to keep us trapped. So, I just had to call in and let you know my experience, all right?
Well, listen. Listen, man, as I always do most times, brother, give you praise and acknowledgement. I'm on this platform because of you. I have much love and respect for you, Brother Ralph. You've always been a straight-up man. Appreciate you, man.
Man, I love y'all, and I just try to be as honest as I can. What we call them, a couch activist. I'm not none of those. I do my thing. I just don't talk about what I do out here.
I hear you.
I'm gonna keep listening, all brother. Right on, brother. I appreciate your show and what you're trying to do.
All right.
All right.
Peace.
Hey, peace to you and your guests.
Right on. Hey, Brother Muhammad.
Yeah, I just want to say, so I was listening to Fannie Lou Hamer yesterday.
Oh.
And she said something I had never heard her say. She said she had invited Malcolm to come to back to Mississippi a few days before he got assassinated. So he never got a chance to come back. But she said he was the best friend I ever had.
Mm.
And she reminded me of what he said to young people, a group of young people that he had, I believe this was one of the first times he visited Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
I heard this when I was about 18 from Malcolm. He said, the most important thing I can think to tell young people is to learn to think for yourself. If you learn to think for yourself, if you don't learn to think for yourself, you'll be loving your enemies and hating your friends. You'll be walking south when you think you're going north. And you'll be going north when you think you're going south.
Yeah.
So, and peer pressure is very, very deep among our young people.
Sure, always has
As
been.
One
yeah.
Ma'am Siraj Wahad said on a tape, why Muslim girls cover or don't cover their hair as a Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
He said, when you're a teenager, the hardest thing to do is to be different from your friends.
Mm-hmm. You're right. Yeah. All right. Brother Irv, good afternoon.
Bravo, you. Thank you for taking my call. Hello to your guest. I've heard him before. This brother's a breath of fresh air. I heard something this morning where the brother was speaking, and he said, the Jewish man, the Jews are all not alike. Some Jews are atheists. Some Jews don't. Some Jews are Orthodox. Some Jews are light-skinned. They are not alike. But when it comes to American Africans, we have to, for some reason, we think in order to have unity, we have to have uniformity. And I want the brother to talk about that, because we are very diverse people. We come in all shapes, sizes, forms. But if we don't know that we are African, if there's nothing that pulls us together, see, the one thing a Jew would do, I don't care what it is, gay, straight, red, blue, when they say Jew, here they come. We say African, we run the other way. I'm not African. I'm not. All Africans I know don't like me. Well, neither does the white man. So what are you saying? My point is, tell us, why is it that we are so, is it just that? Is it just that we don't want to be African? Or is it all the other things that come along with the separation, the religion, the economics? And we keep still sending our children to white folks to be educated. And we do that instead of having a Saturday school with all these churches we have, having a Saturday school that teaches us who we are, where we're from, and where we need to go. We let some white woman teach our young men how to be men, and they can't teach a boy to be a man. They can just teach you, give you the mechanics and give you all the moving parts. But when it comes to the soul of who you really are, because I didn't learn who I was until I was damn near in my 50s, to tell you the honest truth, because I could have went anyway. I could have easily went left, but I went right. And that was just by the grace of God, the God that I serve. Now, I don't want to get into Islam, American Muslim mission, because they have a lot of shortcomings, just like any other cult. I mean, any other group of people do. So I don't put them down. But just to be perfectly clear, the American Muslim mission did do some great things for American Africans, schools and money and bringing us together. But the religion can always be weaponized against you, especially when you start locking doors and telling people to reach in their pocket and give you their hard-earned money. Brother, expand on that if you could, and tell me what you think about the separation that we have.
All right on, Brother Irv.
So,
thank you.
Every separation that we have is well thought out and by design. And I'll give you just one quick example.
at my, I didn't celebrate my birthday yesterday, but my daughter and some of my sons and grandchildren and some friends got together, and I thought I was going to babysit my granddaughter so her mother and her partner could go out for dinner. But they was all, it was all of guys to get me out to dinner to celebrate my birthday. And so they asked me a question about unity. And I said, you know, one of the biggest things that we have not grasped all together at one time, we made many attempts at it, is that we are one people. And the peculiar slavery and the peculiar post-Reconstruction period about being in America has always been about division, keeping us divided and off balance when it comes to uniting. We have a fundamental distrust of each other. We have some fundamental dislike for each other. And as Brother Irv said, when it comes to the Jewish community, or even the Palestinian Arab community, which is most of the Arabs that are in the United States, the majority of them are Palestinian Arabs. They don't ally with us. They'll ally with each other against us. And so that lack of unity that we have is just so well doctored and done, because a lot of it we implement on our own selves. I'll give you an example. During the time that Oshie was first vice president of the NAACP, I was branch coordinator from 1980 to 83. I would feel this tension, this kind of dislike towards me from a group of brothers, Mike McGee, Howard Fuller. I did not understand where it was coming from. And then I came to learn that most of this originated on the East Coast between brothers who were part of the Black Nationalist Movement, brothers, not the Nation of Islam, but the Sunni Muslim Brothers. There was this war that was going on. I really knew nothing about it in Milwaukee, but I came in contact with it. So people have worked very strategically to keep us disunited and off balance, and it works well. They perfected it, and they've been able to do it so well that they can step back, and it operates almost like when you used to throw a spinning top out there, and it would spin, but eventually it starts to wobble. So we are kind of like a spinning top, and we're still spinning, and we disconnect from each other conveniently whenever it's possible. Oh, you part of that Arab religion, Dr. Umar Johnson? I rejected Islam because they said I had to practice Arabism. I ain't never practiced Arabism. Oh, she's been knowing me for 50-something years. When I want to listen to music, I ain't listening to Hoopla, some cat from Pakistan. I'm listening to jazz. I'm listening to the music. Next month, is Black Music Month. Oshie and I, Oshie has held out that we're going to do a show on music.
On music.
And the fact that in Islam, there are some Islamic scholars, students of knowledge, who say it's prohibited for you to listen to music. But for me to disconnect myself from the music that I grew up with and that I've been listening to all my life, I'm not getting ready to do that. I know who I am.
Mm-hmm.
I know from whence I come. So nobody is dictating to Muhammad Abdullah. I'm not an Arab apologist. What those Muslims are doing over there in the Gulf states with all that money, giving a 400, whatever that plane cost,
setting
it out for the president of the United States. I don't recognize that, because Prophet Muhammad spoke against that. He said one of the signs of the last days is you'll find barefoot shepherd boys competing with each other to build lofty buildings. That's what we're looking at now. One of the signs of the last days will be
Women will be clothed, but they'll be naked.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So that's what I embrace about Islam. I embrace Islam that answers the question. The first question it answered for me was regarding racism. And Prophet Muhammad, the only time he ever made Hajj, he said in his speech, there is no superiority of an Arab over a non-Arab, a non-Arab over an Arab, black over white, white over black. That was his last speech when he went to Hajj, the one time he went. So what drew me to Islam originally was just the aspect of the Nation of Islam and the fact that it was addressing the issue of race. Even though it had a lot of L. Ron Hubbard science fiction nonsense involved with it, but it did have some structure that was attractive, but it did not stand. And you mentioned, Brother Irv, the name of what Waris Deen Muhammad, the American Muslim Mission, I think you said something like
yeah.
that. So I talked to the American Muslim Mission for about 15 minutes. And like, no, this is not it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I went into Atlanta in the community of the former Black Power spokesperson, H. Rap Brown, who became Jamil Abdullah El-Amin. May Allah preserve him. He's in prison. It's tragic what happened to his community in Atlanta. But that's where I learned my breast was opened up to what is Islam and what is not Islam. And again, don't conflate the behavior of Arabs with Islam. No Muslim worth his salt would enslave another human being. I don't care who they are, where they came from. And so that's my position. And with regard to our people, we need to find something with common ground to come together. And unfortunately, it hasn't happened yet. Because if you ask, who is the leader spokesperson for African Americans today? Please stand up, will you?
There's silence. Let me say this. I think that today, that's why I'm so adamant about the protection of the Sahel and Ibrahim Traore. Because even as Brother Lust talked about a comparison between Malcolm Thomas Sankara, who was the leader of Burkina Faso about 20 years ago until he was assassinated by the guy who was his right-hand man, and of course Ibrahim Traore, which there's been about at least, I think, about 15 or more assassination attempts on him. And then you have the American that puts up a black face going around Africa, Langley, General Langley, talking all this craziness about. And see, that's the thing. You know, the cracker's doing it. He's the hidden hand. But they put us out front, you know, to do the assassination, to do the dirty work, you know. And so I'm looking at it that this man, Ibrahim Traore, and what they're doing in West Africa that is going around into East Africa, Central Africa, South Africa, North Africa even, to unify African people. It is, you know, whether you are religious or not, or whether you are a Christian particularly, who talk about salvation, that then many people believe that a certain deity is their salvation. No, the only salvation for African people is functional unity. This is what our scholars have told us. This is what anybody who has any worth have told us, is unity. Kwame Nkrumah, Thomas Sankara, now Ibrahim Traore, and so many others, many great scholars, you know, that I have the opportunity, once I gain some consciousness, to read and to believe in them. And so the bottom line is that many of these people who I just mentioned, they had an admiration and a sincere love for Malik El-Shabazz because of the kind of man that he became. When you look at his history, when you look at the things that he did, and then how he transformed himself to be a man of integrity and respect, when those FBI agents came to his house to try to get the dirt on Elijah Muhammad, and he told him point blank, I ain't doing that. And he had a tape recorder under the couch to make sure that what he said was what he said. And what they said, yeah, and what they tried to do. He was a man of beyond reproach.
His pulse never went above a certain level. I've never heard an individual so calmly and yes. serenely. Because listen, FBI, you know, police, squad mm-hmm. cars, detective. But when the FBI come to your door, you're talking about a whole different animal. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he did not waver, he did not slink back. He was just as direct and honest and as about as pure as an individual can speak to tell them,
that's right.
basically, no, I'm not for sale. You already got people working for you. Mm-hmm. I don't need your money. And I'm not going to go to work for you. That kind of integrity, listen, I got documents that I can point to you where it was pointed out that Warf D. Muhammad was like an agent. I'm not talking about from Farrakhan's perspective because he didn't keep the old Nation of Islam going, just simply from the standpoint that when you get a visit from the FBI, and I've been traveled overseas, I've never been visited by the FBI. I don't have nothing. They'd be wasting a whole lot of money messing with me. I don't think doing nothing for what? But in this particular space and time, they were used to buying anybody right. they came with,
exactly.
with money or fear.
Mm-hmm.
And they could not buy Malcolm with either one of those things.
Mm-hmm.
That you have to give him credit for.
I do.
Because as I was telling you earlier, Oshi, after Elijah Muhammad had been locked up for sedition and advising people not to join the military, because in the old Nation of Islam, I don't know about under Farrakhan, if you got drafted to go to Korea or Vietnam, you went to jail. You didn't join the military. They wouldn't take me,
mm-hmm.
but you know, if you was a member of the Nation and you received draft papers, you went to jail.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he did not want any trouble from the United States government. He knew how far to go. Elijah Muhammad did. He knew how far to let his ministers go. He just wanted to keep on raking it in, just like mm-hmm. his successor, the second successor, Farrakhan. Farrakhan, y'all keep paying him long as you want. He'll keep performing for you. But you cannot show any benefit from all the talk he's been doing for all these 60-something years. You can't show me one institution that he's established other than a paper and a bean pie that really it has no benefit to African Americans. And I don't understand why nobody points his nonsense out. They like to talk about it's Alice Lamb. And why would you got to be a traitor to be for these people enslaved your people in Africa? Whoa, how did you ever do it? What is Farrakhan them doing? They got some robots walking around here. And they ain't going yeah. nowhere. The Nation of Islam in whatever city it is in, there are more Muslims in Atlanta, Sunni Muslims, than
More Sunni Muslims in Atlanta than in Nation of Islam Muslims, you're saying? Is that right?
Are you serious? Are you serious?
Yeah.
The Nation of Islam in Milwaukee, Temple Number 3, is not as big as the smallest church in Milwaukee.
That's true. That's
they
true.
They're tough. Like, mm-hmm. They flashy. Because our people are impressed with flash.
Mm-hmm.
They're impressed with being entertained. Some of our people only, and this is somewhat in response to Brother Earth's question, some of our people only want to be liberated if they're entertained. Some people only want salvation unless they're entertained. And it's going out the window. If you look at YouTube, Facebook, and see some of the things these people are doing in churches and some of the things that Muslims in mosques around the country are doing, you're like, this train ain't going nowhere. These people are just clowning.
Mm-hmm.
All they're doing is entertaining and being entertained. And you are not getting ready to liberate a people through entertainment. I don't mean that musicians and entertainers can't be forces or a
right.
part
yeah.
of the...
Yeah,
like,
yeah they
like
can.
Jazz musicians fought the civil rights because they wanted to be able to play anywhere.
Right.
They wanted to be able to play in the hotel. So they were the soldiers of the civil rights, human rights movement. But these people that's out here entertaining us now,
it's crazy.
They ain't looking for nothing, a big paycheck.
Mm-mm, that's it.
They ain't trying to take
And they and their message, they don't have one. Just like when I read the Inyasa Sim at the beginning of the program and he talked about what Marvin had presented, you know, the music he presented at that time had a serious message to it. This madness has none.
And none. Barry Gordy was not with it.
Yep.
Barry Gordy had a brand, and he did not want to do anything right. that controversial
right.
as what Marvin was speaking about, something that
right.
African-American community as a whole is not really bought into, ecology.
Mm-hmm.
We, you know, there's something about us, man. White people come out and march for our cause. We don't stand up for nobody. You can see a Palestinian rally in Milwaukee, and you'll see African-American Sunni Muslim brothers marching with the Palestinians. But if the police kill somebody on Martin Luther King and Walnut, they ain't getting ready to come out.
Mm.
So we still have big problems
yes,
when
we do.
It comes to unifying and a path and direction, because we are so mixed up with stuff. Some people don't want to hear about problems.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to hear about what's going on in our community. Every day we got kids killing each other. Every day in our community.
And
nobody wants to talk about it.
And I think that in light of what we're talking about here on this 100th birthday of Malik Shabazz, Malcolm X, Brother Omar Wali, and what difference would it have made when he was killed almost 60 years ago? What difference would it have made had he been alive? A big difference. Number one, I believe that he would have been able to build the kind of coalition, to build the kind of unity that is so functional, unity that is so necessary for us. That we're aimless. We just do this and do that. We're guided by, you know, senses. What we see, smell, taste, you know, nothing.
Question.
Huh?
Question.
Yeah.
I loved our brother.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I was going to put all of the stuff that we have come to over the past, say, 40 years,
mm-hmm.
from the 60s to now. I don't know if it would be just to put that on the shoulders of that one brother.
No, but see, he was trying to create that. So not only personally, he was trying to create that coalition, and he had,
of course.
And he,
but look what they did to us in the interim, Oshie. Even if Malcolm would have been here, it's almost safe that he isn't here, because then we don't have to really wade into that water. But if you see how effectively they have disarmed and disjointed us,
mm-hmm.
it's almost too much to want to think that that one brother could have withstood all of this and he would be able to make a difference. Could Malcolm have really done anything about crack?
I don't think it would have happened.
Overcome crack?
Let me say this, Brother Muhammad, and I know we don't have very much time, and we're back at the top of the hour. So we're going to go over just a little bit. Thank you, Brother thank you, Brother Elliot. But we're just going to let me just say this. I believe in what he was trying to do at the time that he was killed, when he had in February 21st of 65, when he, right before his upcoming birthday, when it would have been 40 that year, that trying to bring us together, he had the ability to do that. He has the charisma to do that. He could have got the soldiers in line to do that. He could have challenged politicians. There weren't a lot of them then, of course. There's a hell of a lot of them now. And what is the situation? Exactly. Chaotic as hell. We have more people in public office. And still, so I think that the accountability, that's what I'm coming from, Brother Muhammad, that he would establish the accountability for us to change this dynamic, to help young people understand the importance of being educated, to prepare for a future for us as a people, independent of white folks, independent, not begging and hoping and praying, but actually doing. Actually building. And I know it can't happen here. This is the belly of the beast. The military arm of European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege better known as white supremacy. This is the military arm of it. That's why this country has military bases all around the world. And they, not one damn country has a military base in America, but yet it has, it seeks the advantage of having a military base. They have all 30 something in Africa. So I'm saying he had that ability, I believe, and the charisma that I believe that could have brought a cadre of leadership. And so once he got knocked off, had that have been established, we just turn the other page and keep on going. That's what Dr. Clark was talking about. We don't need a charismatic leader, although he was very charismatic, and he could have developed that cadre of leadership that we need to move forward. I mean, when you look at us, Brother Muhammad, and I ain't got to tell you this, you know, and many of our listeners know, when you look at us, the shit don't look good. It looks very messed up. It looks very chaotic, and it is. Because we... it looks
frightening.
It's frightening. It is.
To the point where it is. It's like driving your car in Milwaukee, through Milwaukee and maybe other cities as well. You want to be safe. You don't want to have no accident, but you realize so much is out of your hands.
Out of your hands.
And so,
exactly.
Yeah, I love the theory of what you're saying. I guess I'm steeped in the reality to know that whatever people. Whatever Malcolm, if Malcolm had a persistent, because there are other people, as Malcolm is, I mean, Malcolm is, was one of many, but these people prepare, and I don't want to give them more juice than they deserve, but they're very adept at preparing for whatever move we might want to make.
Oh, yeah.
And they have alliances that they've built, where now they have other people that have come in to help hold us at bay.
Mm-hmm.
Go through our community. It just couldn't be a coincidence that in every African American community you go in America, you find the same thing replicated.
Exactly.
A bunch of Asians and Palestinian Arabs having commercial establishments in our community.
In our community,
where they do not live.
All across this country. My favorite city,
everywhere
Baltimore, and brother Irv knows this. They're all up in there. They're the ones that got the liquor stores. They're the ones. I mean, they even got restaurants that serve soul food.
Furniture stores, clothing stores, cell phone stores.
All around this country.
Trying to find an African-American. When I was in Atlanta, you were telling me there isn't an African-American-owned major supermarket in Atlanta.
No, it's
How?
Not. No, it's not.
How in Chicago and Atlanta you couldn't have stuff that was there previously is just gone.
Yeah. Yep.
And there's no avenue to open it back up. The unity that it would take is daunting. It reminds me of this, Oshi. When I moved to Madison from Milwaukee in 2005 for safety reasons, I was a single parent raising two daughters, 7 and 3, when I moved up there. When my daughter got in middle school in Madison, I went to a parent of African-American students meeting, and the vice principal, who was African-American, said, there are 800 and some students in this school, only 62 are African-American. I fell off my chair. They thought I had passed out. I couldn't believe it. I was like, what if I put my daughter in?
Hell of an environment.
What if I put my to try to have them safe, I risk putting them in an environment where they had no little. The name of the school was named after an African American woman, but they could not overcome 800 and some Caucasian kids. So the challenge for us is so daunting by both the numbers and the fact that there's no dialogue that will get us from here to there.
Well, you know,
and I would love to think that if Malcolm was here, he would be able to sustain that and keep it going. But Malcolm was just a human being.
Of course he was. But he was somebody who had the influence, who was admired. But check it out. You said this, that Brother Rahman said, how could as many people as we are, a small amount of people, Caucasians, control us? Same as this country. They, even though they advocate a majority rule here, because they established the majority, they created the majority by killing the indigenous people, by enslaving us, and making us three-fifths of a person and so forth, and then isolating us and then further killing us and lynching us. So they made themselves, but yet they still control South Africa. They still control Australia. They control. And so the point being that they, what they have done, I ain't saying we got to do that. No, hell no. But what we must do is recognize that we're in peril, because if we don't organize, the model of this program is Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die. And this is what this program is about. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I talk about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. There, to me, there is no other subject. Everything else is moot, because that's our survival. That's what we must do. Because we can sit on these radio programs and all these other talk forums and so forth while we continue to wither away. Here in Atlanta, I don't know if you heard this, Brother Muhammad. You know how when you came to Atlanta back in the 80s, I came in the 70s to visit, and you came, what, in the late 70s or early 80s, right? And stayed here for a minute, whatever.
I moved to Atlanta first time 76, second time 84.
Yeah. And of course, chocolate cities, Washington, D.C., Baltimore, Atlanta. Well, Atlanta at the height was 58% of the city was us. Today, only 48 and going down. No, I'm telling you, they're reclaiming this. Gentrification is serious in this city. They taking it back. Now, your ass might be able to move out to another community, you know, and you'll be isolated there. But the point is that this is theirs. This country is theirs. They took it. I would say, yes, it's in, for those who are indigenous, but they took it. And that's why we must work with brothers and sisters on the continent to reclaim that and go home and do things and shape things in our image and interests, because we can't do it here. We can't. Hell, we
By the numbers alone, Ocean.
Yeah.
We would never get it done. That's why it's so easy for people, educated and otherwise, to just blend in.
Yeah.
Take care of your kids, grandkids.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we have that in our community now, where people that used to, apprentice people say to go into the...
Sure, right, the trades.
Yeah, they don't do that anymore.
Trades, yeah.
If my son and grandson don't want to cut hair, then it's going to die with me.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the way you survive right. A culture.
That's right, you pass things down.
You need these people in the community.
Yeah.
We can't just be consumers.
Well, listen, brother, I want to say this because my time is up, and I appreciate you always. And I know we're going to do the music thing next month. We're going to do the music piece next month. You know, brothers and sisters will learn about the jazz thing, like King Oliver and Sidney Bechet, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Those are our roots.
That's right.
Those are our roots.
And the crackers try to take that.
Well, like Paul Mooney said, you know, they take everything. They took Lionel Richie, they took Whitney Houston, they took James Brown, but they gave him back. So, yeah, they will take our stuff.
Yeah,
or we give it to them.
Yeah,
give it to them. Cowboy Carter.
Yeah, they ain't gonna last too long. But she's on a tour with Cowboy Carter right now.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Knows? Yeah.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Absolutely. Ocean, I appreciate it. Love you, brother. Appreciate always giving me an opportunity to communicate with our people and say what we think. And I believe we agree with more than we disagree.
Always, brother. And, we do.
That's what we should come together around.
That's right.
Is that.
That's Shay.
So thank you, brother, always. And
thank you
to the listening audience. I appreciate you as well, because without you, there's no us.
That's right. You can't do this. I appreciate you. And okay, had so many callers, but this is probably one of the most I've had in a while. And I thank you for calling. Please come back and listen again every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific. We'll be right here. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do it out, and they sure as hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahordieh means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Have a great day. Hope to see you on Wednesday. Peace, family.